is a special present to Air Sports Network. This is the Jay and Keith Show. Two broadcasters, two microphones, and one meticulously scripted podcast.
You what?
Just kidding. Get it, JK? You get it.
That's what I thought was so funny!
Alongside Keith Brake, here's the voice of the Bucks, Jay Sandoz.
Hi, hello, this is Jay Keith. We are back. We had a little vacations.
We got more vacations coming.
You got a big one coming up.
I do. I got a couple big ones coming up. I'm going to Texas, and then I'm going to Ohio. And we're gonna go all over.
Where are you going in Ohio?
To Mid Ohio, the sports Mid Ohio sports car course.
I would not be able to go, but the rest of the family is going to Canton, Ohio. Little football tourney. And Football Hall of Fame and all that. Without
That's got a sting.
Yeah, I'm not happy. I've driven by it like 5 times. I've never been in it.
Was that done on purpose?
No. Originally, that actual tournament was going to be in Cincinnati. And so I was like, I'm going to do some other stuff. I'll take the boys to the tournament. Sonny did, so we're trading off. And then that guy moved to Canton. I'm like, oh, I made a bad trade.
Yeah, go to Cincinnati, get some Skyline chili, see Billy Taylor recruiting. Yeah.
That's right. You know, catch a Reds game. I mean, nobody else is, so, you know, be able to.
Yeah, are they any good this year?
Yeah, they're okay.
Okay.
They're
only, I thought they were okay.
Yeah, they're like 5 or 6 games.
It feels like every team in Major League Baseball is under 500 these days.
Yeah, it's
like they're all just. Why are they all bad?
Well, it's either you're in the division with everybody's over 500, like it was the NL West. It's like 4 of 5 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Is there? And then was it the AL? Maybe East? No, it's not the East. There's no AL.
AL Central's not very good.
Yeah, maybe West. But they're,
Tigers are in first in the AL Central. That tells you all you need to know about the AL Central this year.
Cubs are first, so something wrong with the planet.
Baseball season just ended here in Johnson City, and a terrific end with a championship for Joe Panucci's group. Obviously didn't end the way they wanted to in the tournament, but only one team in college baseball ends their season in a win. So, overall, a very good, successful year, considering it was their first conference championship and first NCAA tournament appearance in over a decade. You and I were both in the booth when Kerry Doan was slinging complete games back in the day. So, I mean, the fact that we both remember it vividly and a lot of other people don't is probably indication that it's been a long time since something like this happened, and definitely a lot of cause to celebrate. And I think just like last season where they were pretty good and then came up short in the conference tournament, a little bit of a raising of expectations. Okay, you got some pretty good players coming back. You expect Jamie Paul Meese back. You expect Michael Harpster back. You know, we'll see what happens with Cody Miller, because I think he's probably on some draft radars. Grant Gallagher, you got some talented players. Axel Melendez. All right, now you've got a pretty good nucleus. Go win another one, and this time win a game in the NCAA tournament, which is something ETSU hasn't done in my lifetime, and I don't know that they've done it in yours.
Yeah, I don't think they won it in the 80s. I think they were 2 and a Q in those as well. And that was in the old 16 format situation back then, so it would be a great season. They made a lot of noise. They were picked as maybe one of the upset darlings. I don't know if you followed a lot of that. So, to me, got the other encouraging thing is you're seeing two non-power teams in the College World Series, being Murray State. And Coastal is a different animal since they've actually won a national championship. But still, you know, non-power teams that are able to do it without the budgets and everything that some of the big boys have. And interesting to see how many SEC and ACC teams get in. And I think they combined for 3, and the old Pac-12 combined for 3. Now I realize one's in a Big Ten, one's in a Big 12.
Right.
One's independent / Big or Pac-12 or whatever they are in
Oregon State. Yeah.
So still there, but great. I mean, it was a fun ride. You hope they capitalize on it. I think that's the one thing. You know, we've had basketball's had multiple runs, men's and women's. Football and baseball seem to have, they have the run, and then next year something happens and they can't continue it. So we're hoping that Joe Panucci and his squad can kind of buck the trend, if you will.
Right.
What I did there.
Right.
But if they can do that, then I think, you know, it's certainly set up well for the Bucks to get back there. Plus, I think shots fired across the league that, you know, ETSU generally has been a hitting team throughout its career. Now, we're again this year. The difference is in 2013, ETSU had Kerry Doan, but they had Kerry Doan, and that was about it for the starters, right? Now you had three, four guys you could roll out there to start. Certainly back into the bullpen was phenomenal. So I think they're in a good spot. I think they're in a great spot. Let's see how kind of recruiting and things goes, because you know when you win, people like to come there. Plus, you know, let's be honest, stadium's good. Going to get a field facelift.
Yep.
Going to have some new turf next year.
Yes.
The new hitting facility building is going to be done next year as well.
So yeah, it's a new clubhouse, new team offices. Joe Panucci called it a one-stop shop for his team, and that facility is supposed to be complete, I think, here in the next couple of weeks. And the team will be ready to move into it when they get back from their summer league assignments or wherever they end up going to compete over the summer in, you know, collegiate wood bat, whatever. I think that it will be move-in ready when they get back to campus.
And again, just it adds to everything that's kind of going on with baseball. You know, you get the turf, you get that, everything looks great. The old-school Darth Bucky will be gone.
Evil Bucky, as the students call it. Our intern, Sophia, adores Evil Bucky.
Folks that didn't live it, they love it. I don't know why.
Yeah. and for the rest of us, it's a memory of a time that we'd rather... No, I don't mind Evil Bucky. I like it. Honestly, seeing a lot of our students talk about how much they love Evil Bucky kind of makes me nostalgic for Evil Bucky. But I know it was a pain for a lot of, like, printing stuff because it's a lot of different colors in the logo. So I don't miss it. I think the E is clever because it's got Tennessee. It's literally got Tennessee right there in it, and I loved that design from the moment it came out. But there's nothing wrong with a little nostalgia.
No,
college athletics is built on nostalgia.
You're wearing the Running Bucky hat, so again,
yes, with the golf club. So. And by the way, shout out Aaron O'Callaghan, won the Palmer Cup as coach of the international team over the weekend. It was pretty cool.
That's a great accomplishment.
That is a great accomplishment. Yeah.
Good for Aaron.
Yeah, no, he's got, I think he's got his whole signing class in now, four really good ones that are coming over from Germany, Scotland, Iceland, and South Africa that will be part of ETSU for the 2025-26 season.
So, again, shocker, golf's probably reloaded, as they always do.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be just fine. You know, sometimes when you have a new coach, there's a little bit of a hiccup. But and I think there was a little bit of a rocky start in the fall, but they figured some things out, and some guys got better. I mean, Gavin Tiernan got way better over the course of the year, and now here they are getting ready to I think they're going to have another really good year. I think they're going to be really, really good again. They won a SoCon title at the end of season number one for Aaron and Mike Colbert as the crew, and excited to see what they do in year two.
So, and this is the fun part because you get excited about season – given some of the newcomers, and I know a lot of people don't like college athletics, and there's a lot of turnover and all that, and I get it. But, like, men's basketball camp's going on right now, and there's players that have just,
yep,
you know, committed to ETSU and will be here in the fall that are down there. That I wasn't here yesterday, but I'm going to go down there at some point and shake hands and put names to faces and introduce myself. And then, you know, I've already done it with a lot of the football guys that are in. I still don't know all of them. Plus, there's more guys coming in that weren't here in the fall. Whether they're transfers or freshmen or whatever. So there's still folks that still haven't not been able to meet. I'm sure you haven't met them all as well. And then it's kind of the fun part, you know. You get to know them. It's part of why I like the job that we do.
Yeah. We talk about baseball. We talk about golf. It's kind of we're into the off season of college athletics, and certainly the content machine will continue to roll because, you know, like you said, men's basketball's back on campus. Football's back on campus for summer activities. But you and I both have our retreat sports. I think most people know that you are you're an Edmonton Elks fan. Is that right?
Yeah. Open up to it was
Canadian football.
It was opening week last weekend. Actually, I got a reminder. Matter of fact, right after we were talking to Joseph Estrie about a few things, and
that's right.
And I said it was the next. Well, it was actually that night. So Thursday night, me and my boys, who just love football in general. We watched the opening game, Saskatchewan and the old Ottawa Red Blacks, and then watched that. And then Saturday night, the Elks kicked off their season, and a lot of promise. Last year, they were 0-7 to start. Okay, quarterback change. Trey Fort came in, and you know, it was 4-1. Then he got hurt, and it kind of came off. This was his first year. They were starters. They got drilled. Got absolutely mauled. Missed 3 field goals. I mean, it was not a great day.
We got to get some guys up north. We got to get you some Buccaneers in the Canadian Football League.
I want to say I was on the final football team. I had a 1 or 2 year stint up in Canada. I don't want to look it up. I feel like that's cheating. I'll think of it in a second.
Yours is Canadian football, and mine is cricket.
Cricket. And circle back to that. That's why you're going to Dallas.
Yeah, I'm going to Dallas. Yeah, Major League Cricket has their big tournament that starts this week, actually, in Oakland. They're going to play, I think, 9 games at the Coliseum, and hopefully no feral cats run onto the field and no possums crash the press box, because both of those are still there, as far as I'm aware. They're capping capacity at 12,000 for that. San Francisco and Washington open proceedings on Thursday. And then I'm going to see all 6 teams in a weekend next week, including Steve Smith, the legendary Australian batter, who is going to be there for Washington. He's technically Washington's captain, but they're Australia's national team is touring the West Indies, which it's their winter, so they're certainly thinking about holidays right now. In warm weather climates, so they're going to the West Indies. So he'll only be in the States for 2 games. And I'm not going to get many more chances to watch Steve Smith. He's 36. Let's go watch him. And so I did it. And then I turned it into a weekend. It was nice. Those are our retreats. Those are our getaway sports. So we'll get to enjoy those over the next few days, weeks, and months. But we still enjoy what we do. And we still enjoy talking to the people that we talk to the most, which is the football and basketball coaches. And I got the chance earlier this week to catch up with Brenda Mott Brown, head women's basketball coach for ETSU. And you're going to hear that conversation next on the Jay and Keith Show. Back on the Jay and Keith Show, presented by First Horizon, and delighted to be joined by the head women's basketball coach at ETSU, Brenda Mott Brown. I've already forgotten how many, his 4th year going in, right? It started to fly by. Eventually, you get to the point where it's just like, it doesn't matter, you've been here long enough, people know who you are. And Mock, certainly, I think you've put a pretty good stamp on this program over the last few years, and looking to continue that as this group, with the exception, I believe, of Megan Downing, is now entirely a group that you and your staff and you oversaw the recruitment of. That's exciting because that means that this is definitively, in many ways, your team that you're bringing in here for 25-26.
Yes. Well, first, it's good to be here with you.
It is, yeah.
There's worse ways I could spend a summer day, so I'm enjoying talking b-ball and just getting excited about our new team coming in July, and about that team, because of my experience at UNC Asheville of taking over a program and that mindset of really everybody is yours from day one.
Sure.
Of course, there is probably a difference when kids sign up for your vision. You know, you've been able to communicate that vision to them as a junior, as a senior, maybe as a sophomore or a junior in college, even, you know, out of the transfer portal, that they chose you. I mean, I've always chosen my players. In the past 3 years here at ETSU, I chose them, and I feel like they chose me, but this is certainly more tangibly so, and the fact that I recruited each and every one of them but Megan. And, you know, speaking of Megan, though, she has our heart.
Oh, 100%. We'll talk about her at plenty.
And she's been phenomenal. And the cool thing was, and that was even with, you know, Kendall Foley last year, and she wasn't the only one. I was the only coach that they had here, even though I wasn't the one that recruited them. So we're excited. You know, I think there is something about year 4. It would have been great to win a championship in 3, would have been great to win a championship the first year. But you typically, as timelines of rebuilding programs and developing culture and just getting your bearings, Keith. You know, I think people forget, I think on average, sociologically, statistically, it takes people 2.5 to 3 years to actually get settled in a job. Mm-hmm. How about that in coaching? You don't get 2.5 to 3 years to get settled. So it's so interesting. You think about assistant coaches coming and going, and head coaches coming and going, in collegiate athletics, players coming and going. You know, and what we're basing our decisions on. So I feel settled. I love Johnson City. My husband and I really enjoy the community here, the location. You know, there's been so many positives about what's been going on in the program so far. Even in terms of the bottom line, you know, 60 wins in 3 years, 30-7 in Brooks Gym. Just some really most season wins in 22-23, you know, most wins in program history. So we're proud of that, but at the same time, I came here in terms of thinking about the basketball piece to win the first SoCon tournament championship for the program, or to help, or to create an environment and recruit the players and the coaches that could do that. And so that is left undone, and so that is our focus. That's not our only focus, but that is a focus for this season.
Yes, and now you have a clear idea of what you need to succeed in the SoCon after three seasons with a roster that, like you talked about, you choose your players. Players didn't always choose you on the front end. They were not, you were not their head coach when they came here for the first time, but they adopted you as their head coach. They bought into what you were trying to sell, and you won 25 games as a result in year number one. But now you have an idea of what you want your team identity to be and what kind of team can win a SoCon championship. So to that end, as we kind of dive into your transfer additions, what do you think a SoCon championship team at ETSU women's basketball needs going into 2025?
Well, if we're tying that specifically to recruiting, first I'll say we got a great core of seven returners, and we could talk about some of them. But what we were looking for in the transfer portal were three players that could help us right away that had Division I experience, and we got that. So I'll start with Anala Nelson out of Austin Peay. She's from Columbia, South Carolina. Was a tremendous high school player out of that state, highly recruited, chose Austin Peay. Her sophomore year, led the Atlantic Sun Conference in assists and also averaged 10 points a game. Between her sophomore and junior year, she actually had a pretty significant injury and surgery afterwards, and bounced back from that, played in every game last year, was the lead guard for them, started in most of the games for Austin Peay, and did a phenomenal job. So, and was really, when I watched her on film, in looking for somebody who could run the one for us, who could come in and lead, similar to what Isabella Hunt did last year for us. I mean, she was a transfer, but she was also a captain. So we were looking for a floor general, a playmaker, though. Somebody who can score the basketball from that lead guard position, but somebody with poise. And losing Kendall Foley, we knew we needed somebody that was comfortable in that position. So Anala Nelson, we worked her out the other day, actually. She's going to be phenomenal for us. I'm excited. And brings a lot of personality and presence, too, Keith. You're going to enjoy her.
Cannot wait.
Daniela Lopez. She goes by Danny.
Danny, yep.
So you guys can call her Danny. You know, really, I love her game. She's got what I'm going to call it bully ball, and you guys are going to be like, what?
Well,
physicality in the paint.
You were on the wrong end of that a lot last year. So was that something that you kind of thought about as you watched her? Like, yeah, we need somebody that can be that wrecking ball.
Yes, absolutely. She's not afraid to mix it up in the paint, but she's an excellent three-point shooter. Now, coming from Xavier, so she's played against the big dogs, you know, played against several NCAA tournament teams, UConn being one of them two times.
Yes.
So, you know, high-level competition and a lot of minutes. You know, she's not somebody that was just watching the game left and right on the bench. She was playing in those games, started you know, I think about half of her games at Xavier, and is just a wonderful individual. She can shoot it. She's a three-level scorer and smart, you know. So I think she's going to add a lot. And then thirdly, we needed a little more – I think we were doing a better job, and you would probably agree, and it shows statistically, of attacking the rim, of getting to the free throw line in the SoCon play. But we needed, to your point, somebody who could get to the rim. Somebody who could be aggressive, somebody with length and size, and that's Janessa Boyd from St. Francis. So I don't know if many of you know, but St. Francis folded their they didn't fold.
They're reclassifying the Division III.
There you go. They didn't fold. They're not going to be Division I. So this is a kid that even in my first conversations with her, is, you know, Coach, I actually wouldn't be transferring except for, I mean, obviously she's a Division I player, wants to play at this level. She was bought in from day one, Keith. You know, I had some people recruiting her, but I think, you know, credit to our staff, did a really good job of developing that relationship. Her twin sister plays at Binghamton.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool and is a very good player. And I think Janess is a little under the radar, too. You know, obviously started, played, was their best defender, averaged about 7-8 points a game in her years there. So we're excited about all three of them. You know, obviously we got four freshmen coming in as well who are talented, and we're excited about those gals as well.
Yeah, I'm hearing strength, athleticism. We've seen teams in the SoCon that typically play at a very deliberate pace or very successful. You think about, you know, a couple years ago, UNCG was, you know, take a ton of threes, some of them go in, light, play with your hair on fire. They slowed things down with, you know, Jade Gamble and that crew, and were able to win a SoCon title. Chattanooga, under Sean Poppy, very deliberate team that won a couple of SoCon titles. Those teams tend to have success. Do you think that is the winning formula? Because you've kind of used the whole Buffalo, so to speak, when it comes to the shot clock and playing in the half court. Is that something that you want to continue to do with this group, or can you crank up the pace a little bit more and get those teams out of rhythm?
Well, I think our pace of play on paper is a little deceiving because pace of play is determined by a lot of factors. So when an opponent misses, I'm not one, okay, let's get a defensive rebound and stop. You know, we're pushing and we're flowing into our ball screen continuity offense. What slows us down is that we're such a good defensive team. We are such a good defensive team. I mean, you're top 20 nationally in defensive scoring, and I don't think that'll change. That's just who I am. I think we need to hit more shots. I don't think our offense is boring or slow. We don't run a ton of quick hits, but we run some. So I don't see us changing. What I do see is having the personnel to be a little more efficient. Let's be efficient. Now, if you look at what did Sean Poppy's teams do? What did Trina Patterson's team do this year at UNCG? They were number one in the nation in scoring defense, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, they couldn't stop Southern Cal.
Well, but, who could?
But who could, exactly. So I think, and then Chattanooga as well. So it was interesting how, I don't know how the men's side shook out in terms of statistically, but it was our top defensive teams that were 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
You know, Greensboro, Chattanooga, and us. And so we're going to guard, but we need to be more efficient on offense. I mean, I don't – you know, try to hide that. You know, we got to get better offensively. We need kids. When you can't score in the paint, I think that hurts you. Mm-hmm. You know, we were having to really work hard. We created more unguarded shots this year than we have in the first 2 years, but we've got to hit them. We actually scored one more point a game than we did in our second year. So I think just scoring a little bit more, obviously, I mean, we need to score.
How integral is Carmen Richardson to what you want to do offensively and defensively after a terrific freshman year where I think she maybe took some people by surprise at just how ready she was to contribute for you?
Well, and if you look at how efficient she was in the conference season versus how she started, because she understood shot quality, she matured in her game and understanding of what we were trying to do, and then, you know, obviously improved her three-point shot. So Carmen's going to be central, you know, to what we're doing. She knows, and she's a great defender. So I love that she's playing both sides of the ball. She's intense. She's got a lot of presence. So we'll certainly be leaning on Carmen.
Yeah, it is interesting to watch a player after that first conference term because she was pretty, just seeing her around, she was pretty quiet after that. I mean, there were a lot of folks that had a lot of emotions, rightfully so. You know, Courtney Moore was very emotional because it was her last collegiate game. Kendall Foley, same way. She was quiet, and she kind of kept her distance. And what were your conversations with her like right after the conference tournament about what you wanted to do and how important she was going to be to your team in year two?
Well, with Carmen, there was a lot of growing, and she would say the same thing in terms of, you know, when you're I was similar, so I feel comfortable saying this. I was an emotional, passionate player. I know that's shocking if you come watch the games. I've tempered. I'm 47 now, so we're not.
You haven't tempered that much.
Yeah, no, you're right. And so I understand that. And then you got some players that are a little more even keeled. Now, Carmen, you know, I'll tell you where the foundation of that is. She hates losing. Hates losing. I think she might hate losing more than she loves winning, you know, but how do you...
That's my favorite kind of player right
there.
How
do you even measure that? When people say that, that almost sounds kind of dumb, doesn't it, you know? but I do think she just hates losing, and she was gutted, you know. She was... with her parents and in tears after that game. And I think she's a kid that remembers the sting. You know, you want kids to be resilient and have response, but we want them to remember the sting. Remember it. Remember how we felt. And we could have played better in that game. We did some things where we lacked focus. You know, shot quality wasn't great. Finishing wasn't great. Determination wasn't where it needed to be. And you look at it and you go, okay, well, why is that? And I've got some – that's not something I want to communicate here. But I think we have some ideas. And then also we're looking to correct that as far as recruiting and in the portal and then how we're going to approach our team this year. But we – Carmen's mindset is what we need. We want winners in the locker room and kids that are willing to sacrifice in order to do that. And I think she's a kid that – she's talented, too. So right. I think that helps a lot.
Yeah. You ever see Shorzy, the show about the hockey team up in northern Ontario?
I haven't.
Yeah. It's a good one. I think you'd like it. It's about putting together a team that hates losing more than they love winning, basically.
And it's hard to – you know, how do you figure that out? You know? I mean, we try to – and then in this day and age when you're speed dating, basically, and recruiting, you know, it's kind of the equivalent, right? I mean,
right. You've
got 10 minutes with this kid, or you've got a Zoom with this kid, or you've got a phone call with this kid, and you're trying to get to know them and how they – I'm really interested. You can see it when you go watch high school kids. How do they respond to adversity? I want to see kids – I mean, they got to be talented, but I want to see them when something doesn't go their way. I love that. Dribble off your foot and let me watch you. Get taken out of the game. What kind of bench player are you? Your teammate does well. Do you celebrate? Your teammate doesn't do well. Do you pat him on the back? Mm-hmm. I mean, so those are the kinds of things. How are you communicating on the court? So those are the things we're looking for. And in the portal, we get to see them on film.
Right.
But we're not going to their – unless we've played against them. You know, we're not going to their games and watching those things.
Yes. And you've got another player that you've got plenty of film on. That's Megan Downing. We want to talk about a lot. Megan is kind of – I mean, she's the longest tenured player at ETSU on your team, so that kind of makes her face of the franchise a little bit for a lot of people. She set the single-season blocks record last year. She is going to cruise to the career blocks record if she continues on that pace. One of the best in the country at it last season, one of the best rebounders overall in the country last season in terms of the numbers. So how much do all of these additions and the growth of Carmen Richardson help her – turn that phenomenal defensive effort into something that is complemented by unlocking her full offensive potential, both on the block and on the perimeter?
Well, for Megan, Megan's going to do the work, and I think you've seen the results of her work. When she came to ETSU, she was admittedly a role player, even, you know, talking to the assistants that were watching her. She played on a very good high school team. She was not the focal point. Now, think about that. That's interesting, right? Now, we've had a couple of other kids that weren't the focal point that we're bringing in, but most of the time when you're recruiting, Sabria Monsanto was pretty much a focal point. She had one other kid that was very good, but she's pretty much the focal point. You know, you look at a Carmen Richardson, she had a pretty good team, but she was the best player on that team. And Megan Downing knew how to play her role well and work hard and does not want the glory. She'd probably be uncomfortable that we're talking about her right now. So
her ears are burning right now.
Yeah, yes. So Megan has understood what I've asked her to do, and the switch was she wants to score. She wants the ball. She has a different mindset. She worked on her three game. Now, she did not shoot the ball as well at the beginning of our season, but in conference, if you look at her three-point percentage, it obviously was decent, and hit some really big ones for us this season, and really in that Furman game. I think she hit two or three in that tournament game that kind of kept us in it. And I ended up going to her for one more, and maybe I shouldn't have put her in that position. But anyway, I think she's going to, you know, I don't know what she was at, 7 or 8 points this year. You know, I think that she'll reach that double-digit mark. I think she can be a regular double-double. I think she can be that because we're going to have – I don't think you're going to be able to help off and double Megan. I don't think that's going to happen. And she's versatile because there's not many pick and pop. You know, we run a screen. You know, you got a bigger defender. And you're probably not going to switch. You know, so she puts defenses in a bind. So I'm excited about all she can do basketball wise. I don't have any doubts there. And then what I've asked Megan to do, though, in the absence of some of these seniors that have graduated that did wonderful things for our program, you mentioned Courtney Moore, Kendall Foley, leading. You know, again, you said face of the program and finding her, because Megan is so intelligent. She has so much to offer. And so just me giving her her understanding, I have full confidence in her. Her assistant coaches have confidence in her. You have great things to say. If not you, then who? If not you, then who's going to be the leader? I think we all know in the climate of athletics or any organization, leadership of the people within the organization is important. My leadership Absolutely. Is critical, but you've got to have healthy leadership on the team. Megan has the character, the work ethic, the viewpoint, the maturity of perspective, because she's not about herself. She really isn't. And that's so hard to find in a leader. And so just putting a voice to that, because she knows. So I mean, it's not that, oh, gosh, I'm worried that Megan's not going to know what to do or she might lead people astray. No, not at all. You know, she wants to win a championship and could have gone somewhere else. You know, she graduated from ETSU. Yep. She's pursuing a master's this year and chose to stay to help us do something special here.
Defensively, I feel like your guards did a really good job of funneling drivers into Megan, and that's part of why she was able to rack up so many block shots. How excited are you to see some of the players that are back for year two? Like, I know particularly a Jaden Harper. I talked to Jaden after the SoCon tournament. Phenomenal kid, by the way. Super smart. Actually said college was easier than her prep school a little bit academically, so she's enjoying this. She said she wants to be on the all-defensive team. And, I mean, I feel there's so much that goes into that. It's not just about steals. It's not just about rebounds. But how excited are you to have players buy into the idea of, hey, this is how we can succeed defensively. Let our rim protector protect the rim. And then you know on the back end you have somebody that you have 3 years of trust invested in to be able to go out and execute that.
Well, it makes me confident. I mean, I think that we do a good job in recruiting of communicating that you're going to have to play defense here. If you don't value it, it's going to be hard. We're going to butt heads, and you're going to butt heads with your teammates. And so if you really don't want to do that, don't come here. So everybody's been told that. And so I'm glad, although I want to be us to be a better offensive team, I'm glad that we don't have holes in all parts of our scheme. You know, when you're I don't want to say bleeding out, but when you're, you know, you're oozing – And defensively, gosh, we're not really good there. And offensively, we're sloppy. We're turning the ball over, which we did not. We were super efficient. First in the league.
Yeah.
First in the league. We did not turn the ball over this year. So in terms of our margin, you know, what we need to correct, I feel good about that because of the mindset. So we're going to guard. You know, the returners understand what we're going to. We're not going to switch up a whole lot of things we're doing on defense. We may press a little bit more. So it's just a matter of, you know, kids adopting that mindset and then us getting a little bit better offensively, but I'm confident.
I have a culture/coaching question for you, just kind of a nuts and bolts thing more so, because I've kind of started to do this a little bit more on the back end with our TV crews. I've started recruiting more of the students and getting to know them and building those relationships with them, and I have people that I trust in leadership roles, but also I think you can speak to this as a coach. You're always a little bit of a control freak. Right. It's just kind of in the nature of what you do and the position that you're in. And in the constructing of this, you have a vision and you want that vision to be exact. So how do you strike the balance of feeding the leadership instincts of your players with maintaining the vision that you have and making sure that things don't get too out of square with what you want?
I think a lot of that is communication and sharing the vision. Not me just owning the vision and sharing the vision, but sharing ownership of the vision. Can we create this together? Yes, I'm the ultimate decision maker. The buck stops here. All things. And I'm responsible for everything in this program. And I want my assistant coaches and our players to feel freedom in that too. So I think we've got to construct the vision together. So if Megan, if Anala, if Paige Lyons, if Jemma Grutner, those are our seniors, you know, and then we've got other leaders on the team. But if we're working together and they own the vision versus buying into Coach Mock, well, that's important that they believe in me. But how much better if we're doing this together? If So I'm going to defend. So, you know, you want your assistant coaches, for example, to treat the program like they're the head coach. Now, is it going to ever be fully that? No, I get it. I was an assistant coach for 10 years. Well, then how do I do that? Well, let's construct a vision together. You know, that's the kind of coach I am, very collaborative, because if I'm collaborating, ultimately I have to be confident, but I have to bring in their ideas and weave those into what we're doing, and the ownership increases, the happiness increases, instead of them just hearing, this is what I want done, and not considering, well, what do they think about that? Now, we may end up going with whatever I want done, even if they disagreed, but they know that I considered their opinion. Same goes with kids. Let's bring them into the process as much as we can. Now, you know, in the games, in the heat of the moment, we can't all sit down and go have a tea party. Hey, Megan, what do you think we should run here? Though I have done that in timeouts. I will give our kids occasionally. You know, if we're in a flow and we've been switching defenses, for example, all right, guys, the other coach calls a momentum timeout. Do we want to go two here? Do we want to switch things up? And sometimes, let's go. And then sometimes Kendall, no, coach, let's go man. You know, let's stay man. So you're looking at your kids that are invested, that have the wherewithal to give you an opinion that you'll consider. So anyway, that's one of the suggestions. Let them own it. You know, there's buy-in, but there's also ownership.
Mm. I do think that you have to give them that sort of latitude to improvise solutions. And they may see things that you don't. When you come in on film and they're pointing stuff out to you, you're like, oh, how about that? I've had that happen to me, where somebody came up with something that I never would have considered. And you know, I think to allow them to do that and empower them to feel like they can say those things to you and talk about them, to the communication piece like you're talking about, can really strengthen the culture of what you do. You've added three transfers, but also four freshmen to your culture again. That are adding to a returning group. And before we get into the remainder of your returners, I want to talk about these four. That's now nine freshmen in the last 2 years, Mock. Are you okay? How you doing? I see there are a few more gray streaks down front than there were when you got here.
Well, we could talk. I don't know if this is the platform to talk recruiting philosophy for women's basketball, but just quickly, because, and this is with, obviously, you know, rev share has gone through, and now the climate of athletics is changing.
We've got a pin in that, too.
So what I would say is we are going to still recruit freshmen and recruit, develop, retain, and try to reward those kids that come into our program and do a great job, that produce in lots of different ways. I mean, there's the bottom line production of, all right, what you doing on the stat line? You know, that matters. What are you doing in the locker room? What are you doing in the classroom?
Right.
How are you making other players better? Okay, so we're doing that, and then we're going to supplement, you know, obviously with the Daniela Lopez's and Janessa Boyd and Anala Nelson. You know, we understand, I'm not anti-portal. I'm just realistic, and I understand ETSU, and I have a belief in what needs to be done on the women's side here to be successful, because the fact of the matter is there's a lot of freshmen out there. We had a great freshman, you know, in the SoCon. We had some really, really good freshmen.
Yes.
Carmen Richardson being one of them.
Yes.
Because there's not such a physical difference between a college freshman. There can be in a college senior on the women's side. So physically sometimes they're just as ready or just as strong. And it's just that, okay, the mindset gap, the pace of play gap. Yeah, there's gaps, no question. I mean, so I think there's a balance. Our four freshmen, love them. You know, spent a lot of time recruiting them. The first one, you know, I'll mention is I'll kind of go closest to ETSU. Emma McCamus out of Virginia.
Yes.
Miss Virginia basketball, or Miss Basketball in the state of Virginia.
Yep.
A 3,000-point scorer, I think, second to Lakeisha Frett, who went on to play maybe at Georgia and in the WNBA. So Emma's in good company, but she's just a blue-collar, tough kid, Keith. So I'm very excited about her.
She also plays at a pretty high tempo. I mean, that I feel like that complements your other guards very well, because Paige Lyons can play at pace. Lucy Hood likes to play at pace. And can also, I mean, she was a point guard for much of her high school career, but she's really good off the ball, too, on the catch and shoot. So I think that, the ability to have a guard that comes off the bench and handles the ball as a three-level scorer and also plays fast and wants to push is going to help a lot of those second-unit players and those 1A players really maximize what they can do for you offensively.
I totally agree. All the things you said are accurate, and I was remiss not to say she's a state champion, a multiple state champion.
Yeah.
So the winning, she's that kid, you know, well, can you will your team to win? Well, not exactly, but she's going to try. Mm-hmm. So she's going to try. Then we have furthest away. Let's go with furthest away from ETSU. That is Lucia France. She is from Traverse City, Michigan. If you've been there. Beautiful place.
There is a hockey prospects tournament that's played there every August. Traverse, I know a thing or two about Traverse City. Yeah, I've been up that way.
Way up there.
Way up there in the UP, yeah.
Yes, way up there. So we found Lucia last summer, recruited her, got her on campus in the fall. She's about 6'2", post player, just phenomenal athlete, rim runner, rebounder, lefty. We love the lefty post players.
Absolutely.
Here, you know, you think about J-Bo, Ja'Kiah Davis, Megan Downing, and now we got Lucia France. So I think everybody's going to enjoy, obviously, watching her. And then let's go with Sabria Monsanto out of Columbia, South Carolina. So she and Anala actually are working out together a little bit because Anala Nelson is from Columbia. And Sabria is just a phenomenal athlete, three-level scorer. She's going to add to, you know, you were talking about the size and athleticism that we were missing, you know, notably. She's filling that gap.
Yeah.
She's one we worked really hard for. You know, had a lot of competition for her on the road in recruiting. A lot of teams jumped on her late. A relational kid and loves ETSU. And so I'm excited about her. And then finally, Maya McCorkle out of Cannon School in North Carolina. Really good in terms of the physicality and that bully ball mentality. Let's get to 2 feet in the paint. But she is mature beyond her years. She was just here working team camp. I think she's like a 35-year-old trapped in a 18-year-old body. And both she and Emma, too, interestingly enough, are actually will be 19-year-olds, even though they're freshmen. So they're going to be the age of most of our sophomore class because I think they both of them had a reclassing experience in their high school season. So or high school career, I should say. So I'm super excited about what these kids will add both on and off the court. I mean, of course, all great students and, you know, should be adding a lot of energy, depth, and you know, really the future of our program.
Who do you think has the opportunity to contribute the most for you early out of this cohort?
That's a great question.
Because
they're all going to be listening. Like, who does Coach think? I think all of them in different ways, you know. If you look at your post position, you obviously got Kennedy Yunkin in there still, too. So for somebody like Lucia, you know, I tell the vets, it's your job, you know, and you want healthy competition.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand how that competition is going to make us all better, and it's got to be the good of the team. And so you want your teams competing and pushing on each other. But then, you know, at the end of the day, all right, you know, somebody's got to start and somebody's going to be coming off the bench and then somebody's going to be in developmental roles. You know, those things just happen in the natural flow of a program. And so in terms of what we thought and in looking at what our gaps were and who could fill those, I mean, I think Sabria Monsanto was somebody that we felt like could come in. But that doesn't, you know, there's always an outlier. There's always somebody that it surprises you. So.
And then September still has to happen, and October still has to happen.
And then injuries do occur.
Right.
I hope that doesn't happen, but it did happen to us last year at inopportune times.
It happens to you every year.
Yeah, it just, I mean, you know,
it's just the nature of the beast.
You know,
yeah.
We've got a broken pinky. We've got a sprained ankle, and that was to Braylon Milton. You know, some of those things, they're going to happen, and so you got to be prepared to jump in. So, and then we just talked about Emma. You know, she's had logged so many minutes in competitive games. Is it going to be her? You know, I think all of them have a shot. You know, what are they doing right now at home? How ready are they going to be July 8, 9? That, I mean, you know, and I'm communicating with them and telling them this is what we expect. Are you going to do it? Because, you know, the evidence will be, the proof will be in the pudding. You know, we have these thoughts, but, you know, it's like ESPN. I know you guys have got to have jobs to kind of talk about the hypotheticals and analyze everything. But
yes.
To me, it's like, let's just get on the court and see. You know, so that's why I don't love answering that question, but you have to ask.
We need content for the content mill. That's right.
Yeah, you have to ask the question. I just don't know. I have some ideas and thoughts, but obviously I think all of these kids will be impact. All seven newbies, I think, will be great for us.
I look forward to having the same reaction I had to Carmen Richardson against NC State then. Let's talk.
She was released, the day before that game? And I think scored 10 points or 12, something like that.
I believe it was 12.
Did she score 12?
She scored 12.
Got a huge and one to cut it to 10 at the end of the third quarter. But
I won't repeat what I said when I watched that game. But it was I was taken by surprise. Okay, so you've got a good returning cohort as well that's going to give you some depth. Paige Lyons, a full year of working with her, and we saw the development that she underwent over the course of the season because. You know, she's obviously a great twitchy athlete and can get to the rim and has great moves to get to the rim, like the great ball fake and then up in one smooth motion, all that, but had never really been coached very aggressively. You got the chance to do that with her. How pleased are you with where Paige is going into her final year of college hoops?
Very pleased. Very pleased. We were just talking about that because she was here working camp, so we were able to work her out. And just looking at one thing. Now she's not going to be our go-to three-point shooter, but Keith, come watch her. You know, look at the improvement of the mechanics. And we were shooting threes on the move. We were doing some pretty challenging shots, and I was very pleased. She's also really trusting of me. She listens. She's loyal. You appreciate that. That's very encouraging. So she's allowed us to coach her. She's allowed us to talk about those weaknesses and shot quality and here's what's a good shot for you. And even sometimes some of those things are hard to hear as a player, but she trusts. Even when she can't see it, she trusts.
Do you think that comes from her background of this is a coach that's really committed to me where other coaches maybe haven't the same way in the past, and so I'm going to trust you because you're actually talking to me about these things?
I think it could be a piece of it. Now, she had her first 3 years of high school. She had a wonderful high school coach named Jan Azar at Wesleyan.
Okay.
Won a lot of games. Jan's been in it. She's probably one of the best high school coaches in Georgia. And somebody I was talking to in Paige's recruiting process. So, yeah, but I think the way she was sort of, you know, tossed to and fro in those other in her first 3 years of college, this was she had the biggest learning curve for a fourth year college student last year. So she understands some of those things. She understands how we want things done. She's, I would venture to say, one of the quickest players in the league. I know Kaya Ellis-Alde is over at Chad is pretty quick, but
yeah.
She and then really, if you look at our wins against Furman and Wofford on the road, was very instrumental. Kendall Foley was out. She stepped into the starting role and I think averaged about 40 points that weekend or something. Or not 40 points, excuse me. Scored about 40 points in two games in that weekend. So, we'll be leaning on her a lot. Lead guard, off ball, she can do both of those things.
Lucy Hood is ideally somebody that's capable of doing both those things as well. You were very excited about Lucy's potential. Where do you see her going in year two?
Lucy, you know, I'm beaming to talk about Lucy.
Because I can tell.
I love, you know, listen to this. I love Lucy.
Da 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 da.
Right, I do. I love Lucy. Lucy has the adoration of her teammates and her coaches because she is just, again, very bought in, very coachable. Did what we asked her to do. Hey, I need you to run the one. I need you to play now off ball. You need to be Courtney Moore sub. Well, that doesn't mean, you know, you're probably not going to get a lot of minutes there because Courtney, you know, is a first-team all-conference player. But she embraced her role. She was ready. Is it going to be 4 minutes? Is it going to be 10 minutes? Or is coach going to put me in to hit the game winner? So I put her in some really tough situations, Keith, and I don't know if that's very smart of me. And I, you know, I ended up communicating with her after those times, like, hey, look, that's on me. You go in and do your job. But, you know, sometimes your coach is going to put you in a little bit tough position. But what does that mean? It means, right, I have faith in you and confidence in you. And I have tremendous confidence in her. She is lights out. I mean, she was here this past week working out, lights out. You know, she's getting herself in really good shape. So I see all good things for Lucy Hood.
I loved coming into the gym, just setting up TV or radio stuff late at night, and I would see Lucy and Carmen in there with the gun out, getting shots up. I mean, she was shooting probably – at the rate she was going, it was probably 200 threes a night. I mean, she was just – you know, those two were nose to the grindstone, working really hard, and that was really fun. So we talked about developmental roles for freshmen. Lucia France – is your post player on the low end of the depth chart, at least tentatively. Kennedy Youngkin was that player last year. In the past, you have not had the luxury of playing that player sparingly. But last year with Megan Downing and Bella Hunt being healthy more or less the whole season, Kennedy didn't have to play that much, and that probably worked in her favor because you got a chance to really work with her and bring her along slowly. How has she responded to that? Do you think she is ready to take on a bigger role in her sophomore year supporting Meg?
I do. We've been very transparent with her, and she has a high level of understanding. I mean, this is an engineering major. She's super smart. She's very hardworking, very mature, emotionally, mentally, all the things, physically, very strong, and did a heck of a job on the scout team last year. Kennedy knows she needs to play free. Don't be – she wants to get it right, sometimes to the detriment of playing free. You know, she does not want to make a mistake. She wants to please her coaches and play well for her teammates. So the question was, is she ready? She's going to be ready. She's going to be ready. I'm excited about her. I have full confidence in her. You know, Joe Silvestri will be back. He's a tremendous post coach. I think he's going to do a great job developing and continuing to work with her. And so I think she's going to have a great year. And she's ready. She even said, I know I need to be ready to back up Megan. And I said, well, why don't you try to battle Megan for that starting spot? But that's, I mean, again, she has tremendous, that post-core, Keith, you could just work with them for 2.5 hours in a row alone. You know, I loved our guards, of course, but Bella Hunt, Kennedy Youngkin, and Megan Downing, you know, you look at the guard post breakdown, I mean, they're just about it. A different kind of mindset, a different level of maturity. When it was work time, they came to work. And so she that mindset and her coupled with her potential and her improvement, she'll be ready to back Megan up or be in whatever role we need her to be.
How valuable was Bella to Kennedy? Because, I mean, that's a player who's a 4-year starter, 2-time a conference champion, been to 2 NCAA tournaments, came in here as a veteran player and was the backup to the incumbent post player here. And bought into that and played hard and never took a shift off for you. I thought was a great example for a lot of people just in terms of what it means to be part of a Division I basketball team.
Isn't that atypical? Wasn't Bella atypical? Who does that? You know, you're a 4-year starter. You come in and you willingly suck it up to the benefit of your team. And she was somebody I could easily point to. That swallowed her pride and accepted a different role. And she was a tremendous example for Kennedy. She was a tremendous example for everybody on the team and was about the right things. And I'm going to miss her. I wish we had more time with Bella. We didn't know how much we needed her a year ago. So I was so thankful she was here. But she's a tremendous example for every college athlete everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish her story was more widely known. Because not many people would do that with the attitude that she did it with.
Yeah.
I don't think she walked down to the locker room and was bad-mouthing the coaching staff or complaining a lot or, you know, creating conflict in the team. She was more working that out and saying hard things that needed to be said from a position of a backup. That's tough. So kudos to her. And she's going to do – so the thing is, she's going to do well in life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because she can take a licking and keep on ticking. She can handle some tough news.
Yeah.
You can be honest with her. She was a delight, and I'm really going to miss her. So, but she's already got a job. She's well on her way. You know, so she's going to do well in life, and will graduate, I believe, hopefully in December with her master's from here.
That's awesome. You have two players that are into the coaching ranks. I don't know that we can talk about where they're actually going just yet, but Kendall Foley and Courtney Moore have both landed coaching positions. Kenny's going to be a full-time Division I assistant coach right out of college. That's incredible. I know you've got to be extremely proud of them, but just in general, like, how much pride do you take in players that come through your program and have such a good experience that they say, I want to do what you do. I want to follow in your footsteps.
Well, an extreme amount. I mean, Kendall, of course, I think we knew all along.
You know, yes, coach's kid,
coach's
all the
works. Kid, and coach on the floor, and she was the one, you know, when I was, I ask a lot of questions in film, and I would have to say somebody else besides Kendall. please. Somebody else answer this, you know. And so she understands the game and understands that she needs to approach it and be a professional and be mature. And I think she's going to do a phenomenal job because, again, she's already got some of those things naturally. So it'll just be we all had to get better. You know, but she's going to get thrown into the fire, and that's similar. My career started that way. I didn't GA. I was thrown into the fire at Georgia Tech, and I had to learn. Learn on the fly, and that's the best way. But she's ready for it. She interned with us. Both she and Courtney interned with our program, and so we got to see them in action and how quickly and how well they could handle tasks for us. And so I felt very confident recommending Kendall to several people, and I'm so glad she landed. And then Courtney, you know, she's a jack of all trades and can really communicate effectively and win people over. She had, you know, loved the football program here, and coaching staff loved her. She interned with them in the spring.
She did.
And I think they offered her an internship again, you know, to continue on. And so, you know, Courtney will do well in whatever she does, and I think this will be a great way for her to, you know, kick the tires on college coaching.
The mock tree. There, you have a coaching tree now.
The mock tree.
The mock
well,
tree.
I guess, you know, I guess Honey Brown would be part of the coaching
tree. Honey Brown's
tree.
Part of the coaching tree. Nadiria Evans is now part of the coaching tree because she played for you.
She did. Janelle, the head coach at Bethune-Cookman, Janelle Creighton, she's been there. She's going into year four, I think. She worked with me my first 3 years. Let me see if there's any other, are there any other head coaches? I got a coach up at Kentucky, the Big Blue, Josh Peterson. He's going into year two with Kenny up there and doing a great job.
Yep.
Of course you being with Pride, I mean, they got to do the work. I didn't really do anything but give them an opportunity, but it's great to see what they did with that opportunity.
Right. You talked a little bit about the NIL piece in recruiting. David Blackburn has been named the general manager for football, men's and women's basketball here. He has said, obviously, DB's been around the football program for several years now, but there's a little bit of a learning curve with hoops. What have your early conversations been like with DB, and how do you see that role supporting what you're trying to do with your program?
Well, David Blackburn is just a tremendous individual with a lot of experience in college athletics. Yeah. So I feel rather privileged to be working with him in this close capacity because he's relatable, he listens, he offers good counsel, and needs to be, of course, brought up to speed on the women's side, but is also the type of person that's willing to invest in that. He's just very relational. And so my early conversations with him have been productive. I think just learning how things work on the women's side versus the men's side versus football, like we're different beasts as it pertains to this, how things are changing and the money side of things and all of that. So just really educating not only DB, but then all of our stakeholders in women's basketball so they understand some of the advantages and the challenges. And then it's also particular to every institution. Like, we're going to have different advantages and challenges at ETSU versus at Chattanooga or Greensboro or Wofford. You know, we've all got our stuff, good and bad. So how do we navigate that? You know, you want to play on those strengths and navigate your weaknesses, but we want to really emphasize our strengths. And I think we're positioning women's basketball to win championships here. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited that they were at the front of mind for people. But also, I think we belong there. You know, that's not out of arrogance or pride. I think we're doing really great things in our program. You know, so the bottom line is we want to get the caliber of player to help us win a championship. But I'm not just a one bottom line coach. We want to be good students. We want to benefit the community. We want to benefit ETSU. And so I don't want our kids to learn while they're here so they can go out and be coaches or be athletic directors like Isabella Hunt or whatever it is they want to do and do well in that. So the number one bottom line is we want to win a championship here. And then there's several other things that we're trying to do along the way. So did I mention the 3.6 GPA? Didn't I?
If you didn't, then you should do that as many times as you can.
So I know. I'm so proud of that. And that's the kids. You know, we provide some structure. So I think David Blackburn's going to be wonderful, and I'm so, you know, grateful to Doc Sander. You know, obviously he's still my sports supervisor. He hired me, and so I'm grateful to him for giving me this opportunity and then also for being a visionary. I think that's, you know, it's like play to your strengths. Doc is a visionary and sees a bigger picture and is very strategic, so I was very pleased when he made this decision.
All right, final final piece of good news, really good news for your program, is your scheduling is starting to come together, and the contract is in. You're going to Knoxville.
A lot of people have asked about that, you know, in the first 3 years. Hey, are we playing Tennessee? And we've attempted that, and then we finally got it done. So we will be going over there. And I, you know what, I don't – it's in November. I think it's our third game, second or third game of the year. So on a Friday night, hopefully we don't have a men's game here, and people can jump in their cars and travel over and support us against the Vols. But it'll be a great opportunity. We got some great games, though. I think we're opening with Elon. We got some really good competition that'll prepare us for SoCon, so I'm excited about that. So thanks for asking.
Yeah, no, you looked like you wanted me to ask. I see it circled on your on your notes there. So
I was prepared. You've always got to be prepared. I'm like, well, maybe he'll want to talk about scheduling. So hopefully, you know, sometimes people wonder about the scheduling. We have to get all the contracts in, and then the SoCon has to send us our schedule, which usually happens in August. So. You know, look mid-August for our schedule. And thank you to those of you who have signed up for season tickets.
Yes.
We appreciate you. We need you. Brooks Gym, again, 30-7 in the past 3 years. I'd love to tack on, you know, 14 more wins to that. Let's go 14-0, 13-14-0 this year.
I don't mind that one bit. That sounds great.
It'll be difficult, but it's doable. Let's go.
All right. Brendan Mott-Brown is the head women's basketball coach for ETSU. Season tickets are on sale now at etsutickets.com. Or call 423-439-3878. Mock, a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us for the last 45 minutes. This is good.
You're welcome, and thanks for the job you do. Always a pleasure on my end as well.
Tony Tiller's the answer.
Tony Tiller!
Do you know what the question is?
Who was the last Buccaneer to play Canadian football?
Yes.
That was 40 minutes ago. That was 40 minutes ago.
That's okay. I got the answer. It was Tony Tiller, the last one to do it. He played for BC Lions, Calgary Stampeders, Hamilton.
There you go.
It was 3 years.
There you go.
I think I shortchanged him and said two. But 3 years, cornerback there with him. But he was on that 2004 legendary.
Well, you know what they say about guys who played 3 years in Canadian football? That they played more than 2 years in Canadian football.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That is correct.
I don't know how you went more than 2 years drinking this coffee. I don't know how you've done it for 22-plus.
It's a man's coffee. Just like, you know, yelled at Dan Earl, it's a man's game in the championship game 2 years ago. But,
that's right, you did too.
It's a man's coffee. It's very
It's robust. It is grainy, yes.
Definitely grainy.
I bought you some really nice stuff, and you drank all of it, and apparently it was really good.
It was good. It was great.
I was hoping we would help you turn over a new leaf there, Sandoz. I got to be honest with you, but you're back to...
You've known me. How long? How many leaves have I turned over?
I don't know. I don't know how much gardening you do.
Oh, yeah. Does mulching count?
Yeah, actually.
Well, I don't do that either, so it doesn't, yeah.
That's okay. Neither do I.
Yeah. It's all right.
You should see the landscaping at my house. No. No, you shouldn't.
Yeah, no pruning.
The entire front porch has been overgrown by a rose bush, and I don't mind it.
There's the, I will cut down some limbs that are near
yeah.
the house.
Other than that, I just pick up the ones that fall out of the tree.
I do that too.
I got one big tree in my house, and it's trying to grow other trees. It's trying to start a forest. I got to cut those down before they get out of hand. Otherwise, I will have a forest in my backyard, which my wife would like, and I think I might like too, but it's a little unwieldy. Speaking of unwieldy, all of our sports teams are back on campus. Football, men's and women's basketball will have coverage throughout the summer. Jay and Keith is presented by First Horizon. We're on the Buccaneer Sports Network. That's our name. Don't wear it out.